How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is November 11, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got Raw to talk about here tonight, some news, and Dave, what's going on?
Kind of a lot, it seems like. I feel like there's just a million things going on this week. Well, because there are.
Well, yeah, there's a big UFC this weekend. We'll talk about that as the days go on. But
20th anniversary.
Yeah, 20th anniversary.
There's all of that kind of stuff. There's all kinds of just getting asked all kinds of questions and media stuff this week. So on that regard, so a lot of UFC history stuff.
It is interesting that the 20th anniversary of UFC is headlined by George St. Pierre and Johnny Hendricks, and I don't know if they're bringing any legends back. I don't know if they've got any.
I'm of the impression that they are.
They are, okay. But yeah, we don't know.
They haven't really talked about it, but, I mean, Dana White had said that. I know that Campbell McLaren is going to be there, who was the first promoter. You know, I mean, Bob Meyerowitz was the promoter, but Campbell McLaren was the original guy who ran UFC, because I actually got an email from him today, you know, talking about seeing me in Las Vegas. And it was interesting, you know, just talking about how, you know, he looks at it now and how he just says the 20th anniversary, and he just says, like, you know, like you and talking about me and Joe Rogan and Joe Silva and, you know, being there from the beginning, essentially, and how important we all were in the sport and, you know, growing the way it did. And that's just an interesting thing. But he said that, like, you know, that this should be a celebration of people like that. So that was pretty cool. So anyway, I think he's going to be there. I think David Isaacs is going to be there. Actually, I'm not sure about David Isaacs, but Dana had said that they were going to bring a lot of the stars from the past. Ken Shamrock probably not being one of them.
Now, for those that have not heard the story, what happened with the 20th anniversary documentary where you could not participate?
I mean, I was supposed to. It was just a mix-up. You know the story. You were with me.
Well, it's for everybody else.
What?
This is for everybody else.
Okay. It was just a mix-up on what time I was supposed to be there, and then they texted me, and I was actually with you at the time, and I was waiting for my cousin to show up, and then my phone died. I mean, essentially my phone died, and by the time I got it charged and the batteries done, you know, and got my text messages, I was already at the card, and they'd been text messaging me about come down, and it was just a mess. It was, you know, essentially, it's not their fault. It was my fault of not having a charged phone, and that's pretty much it. So I missed my opportunity to be on that special, which I probably should have been on. But you know, they had a great special without me, so it's not like I don't think I would have been essential or anything like that.
Well, in 5 years, they'll have the 25th anniversary, and then we can make sure you've got a new phone.
Yeah.
That'll be the plan. All right, we'll get into some UFC news here in a bit, but first off, it's Raw, and this was a taped show from the UK, and they shot a big Survivor Series angle in the main event, which actually, it was funny because we heard reports about how big it got over, and when it first started, it wasn't very big, but they certainly did get into it there by the end, and by the time the whole thing ended, I mean, the place was just going absolutely nuts. They put the Shield and the Wyatt Clan in the ring together for a brawl, and then Cody Rhodes, Goldust, the Usos all made the save for Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, so it's going to be a 6-on-6 match at Survivor Series, and people were excited for it, and they also teased, there were a couple of weird things on this show, they teased a potential maybe babyface turn for either the Shield or the Wyatt Clan, since they did brawl together.
I think everybody knew that at some point that they would be doing a Wyatt against the Shield thing, and I think that, you know, probably at WrestleMania. So as far as, you know, they could keep the heel versus heel. Obviously, if somebody was going to turn, it would probably be the Shield. But I'm wondering, you know, like, there's going to come a point where they're going to break up the Shield and really go with Roman Reigns. I mean, you can already tell that. And, you know, whether it be as a, you know, eventually as a babyface. I mean, that is the idea, is for Roman Reigns to be, you know, the big star babyface of the company. Whether that ever happens, we'll see. But that's certainly the working idea right now. I suspect that they do a 6-on-6 that, now have they announced it 6-on-6?
I don't think they've announced anything officially yet. I can actually go to...
You know, they've only announced it. You know, next week's the go-home show. I mean, I'm presuming from watching that final angle it's a 6-on-6. I actually have asked some people, and I haven't gotten confirmation. I mean, I certainly, you know, when you watch the show, that's certainly the idea that you come up with, that's where they're going. And I think that that's really good because the thing with the 6-on-6 is that they can naturally start the heat with the Wyatts, you know, and the Shield. And you can tell that the people want that, but... I mean, the best thing for the Wyatts and the Shield is absolutely not do the match until WrestleMania. I think that's a WrestleMania match. And, you know, Survivor Series is where you could probably, you know, I guess the real first tease was tonight, and then Survivor Series with them as a team, and then, like, a little, you know, some problems, but not big problems, because then you'd have to do it, you know, in December or January, and I think that's too early. But just a little bit, I think, like, timing-wise, you know, it's really good to put them together, and then, the six baby faces are the six baby faces. I mean, it's just, you know, you just need six guys to go against them. So, I like that. I like that a lot. I mean, I like the idea of it. I like the way it was there, and you have it in the back of your head that you want to see that match. But they, you know, when you thought they were going to really go at it, they all of a sudden stopped and, you know, they were, you know, actually fighting the same fight when it was over.
There is nothing on WWE.com about Survivor Series, that being an actual official match, but, and keep in mind that the right hand doesn't always know what the left hand is doing, in especially the web department, but there is an article here about who is the next WWE champion, and who should be all over this page, but Mr. Roman Reigns, with a WWE title over his shoulder. So, they're doing some fantasy booking, but I'm sure that
the
idea is to get you thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I heard about that when the guy was in developmental. I mean, it's like, you know, the he's there in their mind. I guess, you know, that they see, you know, I don't want to say The Rock, because that's really unfair to put that pressure on him, because he probably won't live up to that level. But that's certainly what they want, is for him to be that. You know, I mean, he's got the size, the look, the athletic ability, you know, I mean, the promos aren't quite there yet, but he's got a really good presence, and you know, they like the family, you know, the family thing, you know, with second generation and all that. You know, I mean, time will tell. I mean, he's going to be the golden child, and I mean, you know, a lot of those guys don't make it. I mean, he won't do badly. I mean, whether again to say he's going to be, you know, that level, you know, the next John Cena. You know, who is to say? And very often when they make those picks of who's going to be in that spot, they're usually wrong more than they're right. And usually the one who ends up being right is not the one that they picked. But, you know, he's going to be in the mix. And he will be successful. You know, he's got all the tools to be successful. It's just a question of how successful.
All right, let's look at this show. It opened up, obviously, with the Veterans Day video. And they announced that Hunter and Stephanie were on vacation. It's kind of funny because they were overseas, so I guess they were on vacation in their home. And the big question was, who is in charge on the show? And the opening segment revealed that nobody knows who's in charge. Randy Orton came down, and he was in the middle of doing a promo when Brad Maddox came out. And Maddox kind of stumbled around, and then Mr. Kane, I guess they're calling him, that was the hashtag on Twitter at least, he came down, and he said he was in charge. Brad blew him off. Brad tried to sign Orton versus Cody. Kane said, no, it's going to be Orton versus Goldust. And Orton said, well, I'm not fighting both of them. So that brought Vicky down. She got tremendous heat. And then she screeched her idea, which was, well, let's do what Randy suggested. It'll be Randy against Goldust and Cody in a handicap match, which, of course, made absolutely no sense. The baby faces taking on a heel. It is a Triple H special, where the world champion faces the tag team champions and usually beats them. Thankfully, he didn't hear. But they had a match, Orton against Cody and Goldust. Fans were chanting, Randy's boring. They got heat on Goldust. He made a comeback, hot tag. The babyfaces were beating on Randy 2-on-1 when he walked out. Everybody's favorite finish. So then Big Show lumbered down to the ring. He initially started running, But then he slowed down, and he was clearly hurting. And he beat the hell out of Orton and grabbed the steel step, set him up next to the table, gave him a choke slam through the table. And Orton took a hard bump through that table. And then the trainers came out to check on him. They showed a bunch of replays. He got really high in the air, went right through the table, and landed hard. But apparently he's fine. He was doing angles the rest of the show. But then Show got in a cab and left, and that was your opening segment.
Yeah, he flew on that choke slam spot. He didn't look like he was under control and then going through that table. The crowd went crazy for that spot.
Oh yeah.
But as far as Show goes, I mean, you know, he got hurt on Saturday night. And I don't know what the injury is. They're downplaying it or hiding it or whatever it is. But on Sunday, he was limping pretty bad. They cut the main event at the house show down to 5 minutes, and he didn't do much at all. And they cut, you know, most of the spots out of that match. And then today, you know, they didn't have him wrestle. He just did the one thing, which didn't require a lot. But obviously, you know, whatever it is, I was just told today that he was feeling a lot better than yesterday. And, you know, there was concern yesterday about the Survivor Series. But, you know, apparently just the way that they booked the show and everything, I think that they're pretty confident that he's, you know, I mean, they obviously believe he's ready and he's going to do the match. So everything's cool.
Yeah. Usually those table bumps, the idea is that the table's going to break your fall and slow it down a little, but he got so high in the air because it wasn't just a choke slam. Big Show was on the top of the steps, and he threw him.
It wasn't like a choke. Yeah.
He went up and down.
It was like he like threw him out, and the guy, it's really hard to control your fall that way.
Yep. He went right through the table like butter and just bam, landed right on the ground. It looked like it sucked, but he survived. So they had 3MB in the Matadors. Santino,
3MB is now the Union Jacks.
Sure, the Union Jacks. Actually, it was funny. There was a heel team and a heel wrestler who both came out wearing the Union Jack on their tights. I don't know why, but they did. And the fans, of course, cheered them.
I mean, as far as Fandango, the idea is that they wanted Fandango to be a babyface. So that's why he did it. And for 3MB, I think it's...
they're the Beatles?
Because it drew.
Mm. I guess.
And I guess they're... I don't know if this is like a name change for them. I mean, they acted like it was a name change. I guess we'll know next week. But, you know, they didn't put those guys out there with... And again, in this match, it made no sense because they were going against the Matadors and Morella. And so they weren't baby faces. So why they would wear that, unless it's just the idea of turning them into a, you know, a Brit, you know, give them a new gimmick. The problem with them, of course, isn't the gimmick. The problem is how they're portrayed. If they're kept together, I don't care. You know, they could call them the Kings of Wrestling, or they could call them, you know, anything they want. If they're going to be booked this way, they're not going to be over. So I don't know, but we'll see. But I mean, with Fandango, it was like, you know, the idea of, you know, getting a cheap babyface pop and making it look like he's a big superstar. I mean, that was the idea with him.
So Santino had some horns on. The Bull did some gyrating, which they claimed was twerking. Santino gored Heath in the ass. Torito did a dive. A lot of comedy BS. And then finally, Santino had a cobra with horns on it. And that was a finish. I believe he pinned... who'd he pin?
Jinder Mahal.
The
Colognes did a double dive right before the finish. It was pretty cool. You know, I mean, I thought that this kind of a match is much better early in the show than late in the show. I think late in the show, this kind of a match kind of like, you know, it would drag and viewers will tune out. But at this point in the show, I thought it was pretty good. Plus, the crowd was great still. You know, I mean, the crowd was great for a lot of the show.
So Orton was all pissed off backstage. Said he was going to tell on Vicky and Brad. And then Kane walked up and tried to calm him down, and Orton told him to shut up. And so Kane said, "You better watch yourself." So I guess we'll see if Kane's...
He's the director of operations, and he's not...
Is he going to work?
He's not...
Is he Joe Park?
What?
Is he Joe Park? Is he going to work in his Kane mask and then be Mr. Kane when he's in the back? What's happening here?
No, I think the idea is that, like, Brad Maddox is like, scared to death for his job. Vicky's scared to death for her job, and Kane's not scared for his job.
Kofi and Sandow had a very generic match, no heat at all, and then Sandow pinned him. Nothing to it.
Yeah, nothing to it. They're trying to, you know, after Sandow became the, you know, the second guy not to cash in and win the championship, now they're trying to push him.
Sure, great timing.
Yeah, now they want him to be, you know, more of a top guy, and you know, they're trying. And, you know, obviously from today, it was people didn't see him as a top guy at all. Poor Kofi. That's just his lot in life right now.
We had Ziggler and Axel for the Intercontinental title. Largely no heat early. There were some loud fans. They got a "Let's go Ziggler" chant started during his comeback. Some decent near falls. There was something resembling an X Factor off the top, and then
off the middle. It was off the middle.
Off the middle.
And but then, that was probably the best pop as far as like a near fall.
Sure. And then Axel just hit his finish and pinned him. I guess that shouldn't be a surprise for anybody, but out of nowhere, that's the finish.
The thing on this one that surprised me, I thought the match was fairly good, but the they put it on at 9 o'clock, and you know, usually at 9 and 10, you know, they put like the big stars in because those are like the big growth periods. And I was shocked, you know, that they put this year. Number one, I mean, the fact that the crowd, you know, the crowd did react because it turned into a good match, but when they came out there, they were dead, which, and again, it's like more evidence of just how badly they've killed Ziggler, because Ziggler, you know, you go back a couple months, Ziggler was considered a star and someone who could be in this time slot. But, you know, I don't know. I believe that I was just shocked that they put this match here.
Kane and Brad are backstage, and they're having an argument. And Brad suggests, well, we're on the handicap match kick tonight. Let's do the Real Americans versus John Cena. And so Kane said, well, all right, let's do the Shield against Daniel Bryan and CM Punk as well. So they agree to these matches. Brad said, let's shake hands. Kane says no. We had a woo-woo guy WWE shop commercial. And he tried to hawk some merchandise, that sort of thing.
Nikki, he looks different.
Yeah, he has his days where he seems like he really cares and he puts a lot into his gimmick appearance. And then he has days where he just kind of shows up for work.
Beard, grew mustache, had a tan.
And that too. Well, he's always had
tried.
Kind of a tan.
He tried really hard in that segment, probably the hardest of anyone so far.
Really?
I know that it's gonna,
more than
what?
Who was it that the first one that they ever did, was it Truth?
R-Truth tried hard too.
He tried really hard.
Yeah.
He was trying to get a job for life in Shop Zone.
He was trying to be Don West.
He was, actually. We had Nikki, Bella, and Tamina. This was so funny because, this was later on. It was another Total Divas incident we'll get to. But anyway, announcers talked about Total Divas for most of this match, actually. Nikki took a kind of a weird bump and landed on her elbow and looked like she hurt herself, but she kept going, so apparently she's fine. Fans didn't care. Chanted, "We want tables." Nikki made a comeback. It was pretty awful. And finally, AJ necked Nikki. Tamina went up top, hit the splash for the pin. And then in the best women's moment in a long time, AJ got in the ring, and she's skipping around, and her music's playing, and she's all happy that Tamina's won, and she skips her way right into a dropkick by Brie Bella. That was awesome. And then she gave a dropkick to Tamina as well, sent her packing, and then the Bellas celebrated together. No hints of a split on this particular show.
Yeah, no cheese at all. So either they've dropped that idea, or they're going, because coming out of this, it looked like they were going to start doing, you know, more tags with the twins against Tamina and AJ. And maybe off of that, they'll go back to what they were doing, or maybe... maybe they've just changed their mind already.
Well, I do have a theory. They are referencing Total Divas a lot on this show. And did you watch Total Divas last night?
I watched almost all of it. I don't think I watched the end.
Well, they had a preview for later on in the season, and there is heat between the Bellas. I guess Nikki Bella gets really mad at Brie for, I guess Brie refers to her injury time off as a vacation, and this makes Nikki very upset. And anyway, maybe the idea is that they're going to try to do a closer tie-in with the show. And so,
they time the split while the show's doing the split.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that makes sense actually. Well, then it's good to be doing the tag match, and you can start the teasers of the split in the tag matches.
Sure. We had the Shield and Randy having a meeting backstage. Randy's all pissed off. Where were you? I got my ass kicked. Why weren't you helping me? And they basically tell him it's none of your business. We don't work for Hunter. We don't work for Stephanie. We don't work for Kane. We don't work for anybody. And we damn sure do not work for you. Which is kind of funny because every time Hunter and Steph are out there, the Shield is working for them. So,
I thought they just said that they don't work for Vicky, Brad, or Kane, or you. I don't think
Hunter. You're right. You're right.
They didn't say Hunter and Stephanie because my impression when I watched this was that they only work for Hunter, and the only reason that they're saving Randy Orton is because of Hunter.
I see. Fandango.
And they explained that, and then Randy didn't even realize it, I guess, until now.
Well, me and Randy are on the same page. There you go. Fandango and Tyson. This was the
This was definitely hilarious.
They shot an angle on Total Divas where Natalya is training with Fandango in one ring, and Tyson is training with Eva Marie in another ring, and jealousy erupts between the married couple, and so that led to this match. I guess Tyson on the show threatens to kick Fandango's ass, so that leads to this match.
I don't think he went that far, but he was
no, he said, you better hope we don't wrestle soon. That's a threat.
Okay.
That's a threat. Not as much of a threat as when Nikki Bella threatened to shoot on Eva Marie.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
That was awesome. But anyway.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is when they showed the clip of this, Summer Rae was also mad because
that's right.
Tyson, because Fandango was hanging out with
Natalya.
And Tyson was going to to Fandango. You do realize that we're married, and he's going like we're just like training together. And while he's in fact training with the hot girl,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so contrived. But
it's ridiculous.
I liked it because I liked it because it took this match where you really have these two guys. I mean, Fandango's been buried. Tyson Kidd, nobody cares about, and you at least gave them this weird story to have a match. Tyson Kidd's such a good wrestler, and he was trying like to get the crowd going, and they just wouldn't get into him, you know. And I mean,
I just thought the funniest thing about this whole deal was this whole angle that they showed from Total Divas hasn't even aired on the show yet.
No, I know it's coming up.
That
soon.
Was a preview. They shot an angle based on a preview.
Well, that's where they're at right now. If they figured out they could use it to they get some heat in this 3-minute television match.
Well, they did actually have a hell of a 3-minute match. They worked really, really hard. Fandango was super over. The crowd was fandangoing. He had the Union Jack pants on, and they did the Bret Hart British Bulldog SummerSlam 1992 finish, which got a huge reaction. I think largely just because Fandango won. I don't know how many people there actually remember that finish, but it was good. This was good.
Yeah, I don't know. I sensed the crowd was just, I just sensed Tyson was trying so hard to get the crowd going, and he just wasn't. It wasn't working. It wasn't connecting. He's really good. I just hope that people figure that out for his sake. There's something missing in him, though. Obviously, it's there's something flat about his personality when he's in the ring, it's like he's just kind of there. You know, he's not really like that. I think that the portrayal of these two as married, but already like having this middle-aged relationship is an absolute killer on both of them as far as getting over past a certain level. You know, because it's, I don't know exactly why, but it's just like, I think that, just watching it, just on the show, it's just kind of like, it's like, well, he's just some guy who's, got a girlfriend that's, more interested in whatever, the way he's portrayed. And then it's I just think it hurts. I think it just hurts him a lot.
So then we had Cena and the Real Americans. in a match that a couple of weeks ago, for a while actually, I was talking about how desperately I wanted to see Antonio Cesaro giant swing El Torito. I now have a new thing, and that is I need to see him swing John Cena. They have to have some sort of plan. This is two times now that Cena has avoided this swing. So, I mean, it's obvious if you've been reading the House Show reports. I mean, John Cena a couple days ago came out and put over Antonio Cesaro, who he called Claudio, by the way. Put him over just so hard. And when you watch this match and some of the spots that they do together, I mean, it's clear he really, really likes Antonio Cesaro. So I'm hoping that he's not taking the swing now because he's saving the swing for a big match down the road. That's all I can hope. But he avoided it.
I don't know. I think it may just be, I don't know how it's, you know, I mean, Cena is hurting, you know, especially now that he's been working
every
night.
It's a swing.
I know, but he, the match wasn't bad because Cesaro actually was pretty much great in this match. I mean, as I'm watching this match, all I could keep thinking of is, God, they got to do something with this guy. He's so freaking good, whether it's as a babyface or as a heel. He needs to be out of this tag team. He needs to be up there. I mean, he needs to be up there, you know, in some form or fashion, in some way where he's with the main event guys because he's just so freaking good. But John Cena was really bad in this match. I mean, just his punches looked awful. His bumps looked bad. I know he's hurting too. It was just, it was weird. It was like, it's like the match was good because they're two guys, but John Cena's, he just looked bad tonight.
So they do this match, and Del Rio comes out to do commentary. And, of course, Cena's hated. They do the backdrop into the uppercut spot. Everybody cheers. And finally, he clotheslines Cesaro out of the ring, puts Swagger in the STF. Swagger taps out, and that is the end of the match. Cesaro then attacked Cena, and Cena tossed him outside. So as he's distracted, Del Rio hits the ring with a chair, and he pilmanized the arm of John Cena, put him in the arm breaker, and actually got a lot less of a reaction than I would have expected. Probably because the fans didn't care that Cena was getting beat up. They probably actually enjoyed it.
They kind of hated Cena because, yeah, you're supposed, the idea is that, you know, I mean, oh my God, he's going to, you know, he's
break
going
his
after
arm. They're hoping
he's going after the arm that everyone knows he just had surgery on. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, the people just, I mean, this was a crowd that really didn't like John Cena. So it wasn't, they weren't odd about this at all.
No. So Biggie Langston made the save, which actually they loved Biggie Langston. A lot of Biggie Langston chants. And he made the save. And this led to a segment where Del Rio's backstage with Vicky, Brad, and Kane. He's all pissed off. And so they made a match with him and Biggie for later.
I got to say something. You know, I was going to wait until the thing with the Langston Del Rio match. But probably of all the things that happened on this show, the one thing where I'm watching it, and I'm just, like, really appalled at the booking, was the Alberto Del Rio-Biggie Langston match. Because, like, Biggie Langston lost to Randy Orton, but he had a good match with Randy Orton. He came out with a little bit of momentum. He does this run in here, and he gets a really big reaction. So there's this again, he probably, I mean, you know, Del Rio is going for the championship. Del Rio did have to win a match on TV. Okay, they could have done a match in a different way to protect Langston a lot more than just, you know, whether it's outside interference or just not doing this match on TV. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe doing this match later. I mean, it's like, do they have to? Is there like some rule that on Raw they have to like beat everyone who gets a little bit of momentum? I mean,
sometimes I think that the idea is that they give him a little bit of momentum just so he can put someone over who's getting ready for a title shot.
Okay, and there's nothing wrong with that if it's like a mid-card guy. But the thing is, if it's a mid-card guy who's got, because it's like Langston, you know, again, number one, they just beat him last week. Number two, when they beat him last week, they at least gave him a very competitive match with Orton. And this one, it wasn't even like a competitive match. I mean, it's not like it was a squash match, but it was like this four-minute thing, and he got beat way too easy, and he tapped out to an armbar. I mean, this is one of those things where maybe he shouldn't be tapping out to an armbar when he's got those big arms. You know, so it's almost like, you know, like, I don't know. I just felt that the finish for this week. I mean, it was wrong. It was the wrong guy to put against Del Rio when the guy had momentum. I mean, you know, he could beat anyone on the roster with an armbar. It doesn't matter who it is. I mean, you could have reversed it and put, like, here's the thing. You could have not had anyone make the save, okay, and just, you know, whatever, or had like R-Truth make the save, okay, and then have him kill R-Truth, and that'd be fine. And then put Big E against Ryback in a singles match and do the big, you know, Big E would have gotten something out of beating Ryback. R-Truth is too far down to have gotten anything out of that match anyway, so he got the win. So it's kind of like, you know, R-Truth was zero momentum and zero chance of having any momentum. He's the one who's protected on this TV show when he's not on the way up, and the guy on the way up is the guy who gets beaten a squash with an armbar in the middle. It's like, that's not how you make new stars. You know, it's like, yeah, I know what you're saying. It's like, well, they give a guy a little momentum so it means something to beat him. Okay, but not a guy who can be a top, you know, or a guy on the ascent. You know, a guy on the ascent needs to be protected like a guy on the ascent. A guy who's just there, you know, Kofi Kingston or whoever, Tyson Kidd, you know, any of those kind of guys. You know, you could do the same thing with them, and they wouldn't get the pop making the save, but you wouldn't be killing them dead. If they were going to give those two guys like a 13-minute match, and Del Rio has to cheat to beat him, but he still wins and gets heat beating him, that's fine. But if you're going to do a thing where we got to put Del Rio over really clean with an armbar over somebody, he ain't the guy that you should be doing it with. I don't think. At least not this week.
Well, on the subject, Truth faced Ryback. Truth actually had a new personalized rap, so Conan will be very happy to hear that. This match went seemingly forever, and then suddenly, Truth cradled him for the pin. And I was completely baffled, but then later, when Paul Heyman came out and buried Ryback, all I could figure was, are they doing a Ryback babyface turn and he's doing some jobs?
Yeah, because, you know, I think they're doing a babyface turn, and their mentality is that if we're turning a guy, we can beat him because sure, he's a whole new guy. So, but okay, so that's fine, but if you're going to beat him, why R-Truth?
Because
the whole thing is, so now they took a guy, like I just said, they took a guy who's not really going to be helped by this win. Because R-Truth is already established, and, you know, why give the win to a guy who can't be helped?
You're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's amazing that, like, this goes through channels. You know what I mean? It's like one thing if it's like one guy writing this that doesn't know anything about wrestling and you ask these questions, but this goes through channels. I got to, you know, isn't there some agent who goes, aren't we going to protect John Cena's buddy and this? I don't know. I'm watching this and it's just like, this is just baffling.
Paul Heyman's back. He's in the ring in a wheelchair and a neck brace. No Ryback, but Axel is there. And he explains that his injuries, everything that's happened to him, it's all Ryback's fault. That big, ugly,
Ryback in the
dummy. Big, ugly, dummy Ryback, and the fans, as you noted, says that he vows to return with a vengeance. He's going to continue his feud with Punk. Punk comes out, at which point Paul begins to scream, "Oh, no!" And I was like, you didn't think Punk was going to be in the building, dude? You saw him here. So Axel jumps Punk. They get in a brawl. Punk gives him the GTS, gets in the ring. Heyman is screaming for mercy. And Punk spins him around in his wheelchair and then beats the hell out of him with a kendo stick and leaves him laying as we get ready for the main event. So Paul's back, and this feud will continue. Shield against...
Who's Paul going to manage?
Well, he's got Axel for now.
That doesn't do anyone any good.
Well, maybe he'll manage...
I mean, eventually he's going to manage Brock, but I guess, the thing is like, he's got to manage somebody to go against Punk now that they've brought this up. So does Punk return to wrestle Brock?
Give him Antonio Cesaro for a while.
What?
Antonio Cesaro for a while.
I hope they do.
That would be cool.
That may be what the guy needs. Cesaro should be a single. It shouldn't be in that tag team, that's for sure.
We had Shield against Punk and Bryan in the main event. Very good match, obviously. Heat on Bryan. Punk made a comeback. Bryan did a big dive, and then Roman speared him to death outside. Punk did a dive. Punk hits a GTS on Reigns, puts the vice on Dean Ambrose, and as Ambrose is about to tap, the lights go out, the Wyatts end up in the ring, and the referee runs for his life. So Seth gets in their face, angry that they've interrupted his match. Ambrose gets in their face. It breaks down into a Wyatt versus Shield brawl. Bray gets in the ring. He's trying to pull the guys off of each other. Fans are going nuts with Yes Chance. This is awesome, Chance. Heels finally decide, okay, there are faces in here that we need to kill. So they attack Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. The Usos, Goldust, and Cody make the save. We have a 6-on-6 brawl. Babyfaces clear the ring. And as noted, presumably, that is the big 6-on-6 elimination match for the Survivor Series. I presume it's an elimination match. Could just be a 8-man tag. But we'll see.
It could be a lot of different. It could be a lot of different things. I would presume if they do a 6-on-6, and I don't even know that that's the case. If they do, it probably would be elimination, and it probably would be a really long match. And they probably may only go with like a 5 or 6 match show. I mean, because they've done nothing. What are we, 13 days away now? 12 days away from the show?
Something like that, yeah. Just under 2 weeks.
Okay. So we have 2 matches announced. And one of them is Randy Orton against The Big Show, which I mean, I know they're trying to push it, but if Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan didn't do anything on pay-per-view, I don't know that Randy Orton and The Big Show is doing much on pay-per-view. And Cena and Del Rio is, and it's still Del Rio. I mean, it's I guess it's something, but... You know, this one's not, I don't know. It's like, again, I really feel that the creative is just really, you know, they got no plan and they're just grasping right now.
Now on the subject of main events, the fans are going to get to choose the main event of the Tokyo Dome show.
Yes.
How exactly is this going to work? Just voting on the TVSIU website?
They're voting on the website, yeah. The deal is, and it is, the bookers saw the reaction, and this, you know, some people have asked about this, and in fact, that is the case. They saw the reaction in Osaka, and it just wasn't what they expected, and this is the decision they made. I hope and believe that the fans will pick Naito and Okada as the main event. It doesn't really matter, honestly. I mean, it's going to do the same.
Before you go any further, just let me say, for those of you that are wondering what the hell we're even talking about, they're not choosing, like, the participants. There are 2 main events
No, they got Kazuchika Okada and Tetsuya Naito are wrestling for the IWGP title, and Shinsuke Nakamura is defending the Intercontinental against Hiroshi Tanahashi.
So it's basically
originally Okada and Naito was scheduled to be the main event at Tokyo Dome. This is equivalent to a WrestleMania main event. So on the pay-per-view on Saturday in Osaka, the crowd just did not react to Okada and Naito at all. I mean, they reacted to Okada. They did not react to Naito. He seemed just, I mean, he wrestled great. I mean, he was in a match that should have got him over in the sense of, I mean, he sold great. He got beat up. He was bloodied up hard way, went through a table, his head smashed into the metal spokes or whatever that deal is, you know, the stand, legs. And he, you know, he looked like he was knocked out. He made it all woozy, made a comeback, one clean in the middle. I mean, I'm watching it going like, he should really be over, but he just wasn't. There was a lot of disappointment all night regarding the crowd. It wasn't a bad crowd. It was better than most, but like Osaka crowds, the last couple of big shows there have been just off the charts. And this was not off the charts at all. And I don't know the reason why. I know that in New Japan, there's the thought that they're running the city too often, that they've come back too many times. And then, you know, that's, very what's the word? You know, I mean, I don't disagree that there's that one. The other one is that there was just a pay-per-view in Osaka the previous Sunday, I believe it was, Saturday or Sunday, I think, for Dragon Gate, which was really a hell of a show, the Dragon Gate show. And I know that they attract different audiences, but there's probably some crossover. And you're talking about, you know, it's been a little while for New Japan, but it's really been 6 days since there's been a big show in that market. And it's not, you know, I mean, Tokyo's, you know, kind of got the population where you can kind of get away with that, but, and Osaka does have a pretty big population, but, you know, again, the idea that you're coming back quickly, maybe that had something to do with it too. But, you know, even saying all that, the reaction to, Naito was just bad. And, you know, it was kind of a move where, okay, you know, the fans reacted great to the Nakamura Tanahashi match. So it's like, okay, fans pick, but I'd like to think that the fans will pick the Naito Okada match. I think it's really, there's a part of me that thinks it's really cool that they've got this Intercontinental title over, better than anyone's had a secondary title over in a long, long time. And the fact that, you know, their number one star is fighting for the secondary title. You know, that it's, and fighting against another guy who, you know, is a big time top star for this, you know, I mean, I think that that's really cool, but, and it may be the biggest match on the show. And in theory, you want the biggest match to main event, but I just think that, I don't like, I mean, if there's, you know, I'm not like against the idea that there are times when the world championship match is not the main event, you know, when you've got some special dream match or something like that. But I don't think this is that time. And I think that it's very important. It sort of undercuts the very idea of Okada winning that championship. I mean, like, if he's going to win the championship and then be put in the semi-main event, it's kind of like, why did he even bother winning, you know, over Tanahashi? Tanahashi just sort of won, and maybe he should have won anyway. That's a different story. But it also, like, you know, it really, it's such a, you know, it's a double whammy on Naito, because it's number one saying, we all saw what the fan reaction was, and it's saying that because the fans reacted like this, the office is changing, you know, its perspective on him before the big show that he was supposed to headline. You know, I just think that you know, they built this thing up since August, since he won the G1, and it you know, I know it's not, it probably isn't the number one match, but I just feel that in this case, they really need to be the main event. But the fans are going to vote, so there you go.
Anthony Pettis is injured and out.
Yeah. So that Josh Thompson, Anthony, I don't know what the situation is. I'm sure it'll all be clear in the next day or two. Regarding, you know, I'm guessing, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how serious the injury is, how long he'll be out. So the deal is that they're pulling Demetrius Johnson and Joseph Benavides from the November 30th show, which was the Ultimate Fighter Final on FS1, because the other show was far more important. The December 14th show was on Fox, and with the main event gone, they felt that they needed a championship match to headline. So they pulled that one, moved it to Sacramento, where Benavides lives anyway. So it's kind of, I when they first announced Sacramento, I had thought they were going to go with Johnson and Benavides anyway, because I just thought that it would be really cool for Sacramento to have Mendez. You know, Chad Mendes is fighting on the show. Uriah Faber is fighting Michael McDonald on the show. And then headline it with Benavides and Johnson. I thought that would be cool for the Sacramento market. They ended up, you know, instead doing that one match, you know, originally for Vegas, and then putting Josh Thompson from San Jose, which is 2 hours away, but it's somewhat local, and it's a better match for television, which is the key. You know, I mean, Thompson and Pettis is just, it's higher profile championship and bigger names, but they don't have that option now. So they just made the move. It's the move you had to make. You know, it's one of those things.
And Anderson Silva commented today about the win by Vitor Belfort, and he said that he does, in fact, think that Vitor deserves a title match, which is a big switch.
Yeah, because Anderson always thinks nobody deserves a title match.
That's right. He's already beaten
the guy. It's like he didn't think, you know, he didn't feel Chael deserved it, but eventually agreed to fight him. He didn't think that, who was the one that, Weidman? Well, you know, Weidman he thought was very good, but he just thought Weidman's name wasn't big enough. And Weidman and him actually did a pretty decent buy rate, better than maybe, you know, maybe, you know, it didn't do too badly. So, but he was thinking that, you know, the guy, and, you know, the guy is a good fighter, but he's not, you know, he needed more exposure. And I could see where he was coming from there, but there was nobody else. And, you know, I think that was the answer. He was the best alternative. So, you know, you got to fight somebody. And, in this case, I mean, look, Vitor's had three straight knockouts, two in the first round, one early in the second, all with head kicks. All over really good fighters. I mean, this guy has absolutely earned a championship fight. So, and he'll probably, you know, barring something unforeseen happening in Silva Weidman that necessitates an immediate rematch, he's almost surely going to be getting, you know, or an injury situation, he's probably going to get that championship fight next.
All right, let's do a few of the questions here. This person says, I've been listening to Brian's shows about the 2005 Cow Palace Convention of Doom. More than a few times over the week of shows, guests bring up that WWE killed off San Francisco and Oakland as wrestling towns. Was there a string of bad shows that killed those towns? Or what was it that made two major Bay Area cities die? In 2011, WWE put a pay-per-view in Oakland, and if I can remember from being there, the gate wasn't that big. Do you think the WWE has any fears of bringing Mania 31 to the Bay Area? Or will people who fly in for Mania weekend cover for the normal low attendance?
Well, the Bay Area, San Jose has been, you know, normal attendance for the last couple of years. And that's where the Mania, if it's going to be Mania in 2015 in San Jose. And it's been a lot of years. Oakland, yeah, I mean, I remember at that period going to some Cow Palace shows that didn't draw well at all. And, you know, but again, I almost felt when I would go to the Cow Palace that it was, you know, it was like going to taking a trip to the past. It's just, you know, you go to these modern buildings and the Cow Palace is just, you know, it's a rodeo arena from the 40s, you know what I mean, the 50s. And I mean, it served its purpose in a different era, you know, and obviously it was actually, you know, one of the most legendary pro wrestling arenas in the country for, you know, a period of time. But I just remember when I would go there for WWF shows, and I even told them, I just wouldn't book the Cow Palace. And they used to argue with me over it, you know, because, you know, and I wouldn't book this. And it's like San Francisco, major city, best arena, and look at the history of wrestling at the Cow Palace. It's a great arena for wrestling, and it was. But I just remember going there and just thinking, but again, if you had the right attraction, and it was at the Cow Palace, it would draw. At the time, when they were coming, they obviously were coming with cards that the cards they were coming with were not the right attraction because they didn't draw. So that's it more than almost anything else. I mean, when Eddie Guerrero and Brock Lesnar, which was 2004 at the Cow Palace, I mean, they sold it out and you know, it was a, you know, that was a real big deal match. So it's just what you bring.
This person says, I was recently watching an old clip of Lance Storm winning his third title at the same time at WCW back in 2000, and Kevin Nash coming out and booting him in the face just after the announcers were building it up as a huge moment, making Storm look like a total geek in comparison to the mighty Nash. So my question is, how much credit or blame should Nash get for his friend Triple H being an insecure guy and needing to stick his nose in every program that gets over without him, such as the CM Punk angle in 2011, and most recently, the Daniel Bryan angle, and the angles usually turning out worse with Hunter's involvement?
I think he believes that they're going to turn out better for his involvement, and he's giving, you know, them a rub of credibility. I think that I think he really believes that. But yeah, I think that in those two cases, things didn't turn out the way that they could have. They didn't get the most optimum out of the crowds, you know, In the case of CM Punk, I mean, the crowd was pretty much, you know, they reacted pretty big for him. And, yeah, I think it hurt. And with Daniel Bryan, you know, I mean, it was, just, I don't know. I just felt sorry for the guy, but I mean, he's going to have a nice run and he's going to be doing well. And he's pretty much, I think, earned a good spot. But, yeah, I would have at the least, I would go and go, you know, there are reasons that Daniel Bryan may not be the guy. There really are. And all those reasons that they say, there could be validity to them, you know? I mean, but the thing is you don't tell people that ahead of time. And to me, it's like if you have a guy who you're not sure if he's going to be able to draw on top, but because of injuries or whatever, he's your guy on top, and the crowd kind of likes him. To me, I do everything in my power to hide those weaknesses, to not flaunt those weaknesses, and to try to draw money with him based and really promote his strengths. And they did the opposite, and it didn't draw. So we don't know if it didn't draw because they just pushed his weaknesses and hit his strengths, which is really stupid. Or maybe you know, some guys can't draw on top. I mean, and it's nobody's fault. It's just the way it is. But I don't think that we got a fair. I don't think we got a fair evaluation of it. I think they did everything wrong, and then the guy's going to suffer from the stigma because creative did everything wrong, and that's kind of what's happened here. So, we were complaining about it while it was going on. I mean, I certainly had the hunch it was going to be like this. I know you were even stronger on it, and the reality is, it's like, okay, look, you got to wait till the number comes in. They think they're geniuses. And sometimes, you know, they're not dummies. Sometimes they're going to be right, and sometimes we're going to be wrong. But in this case, they were really wrong. And there's no argument of that now. I mean, like, at the time, it's like, maybe they're going to be right. They weren't right. They were wrong. And it's unfortunate.
This person says, is New Japan's current iPay-per-view success going to lead to them getting a weekly television deal, or would they rather stick to their current model?
I don't think one has anything to do with the other. The problem with television is that, when you got six major stations, and I mean, I know that there's all the kinds of satellite stations and things like that, but you still, it's not as fragmented as our TV situation is. It's still very dominated by a certain number of stations, and those certain stations, to be in a good time slot on those stations, you need to get a certain rating, and pro wrestling just simply can't get that kind of a rating. It can't get a network level rating in prime time right now. It's just not popular enough. So they're not going to get that. I mean, they have lots of TV if you have the stations. They got plenty of TV. You know, it's just that it's not stuff that a lot of people watch, and their network show is on at a time slot like 2:30 a.m. or 3 a.m. Yeah, all the hardcores will DVR it and all that, but the problem with New Japan and all of Japanese wrestling right now is there's a very fervent, small audience that seeks it out, loves it, is entertained by it, but they're not getting the new audience, they're not getting the mainstream audience because they don't stumble on it. It's not part of the culture at that level like it was in the past. And so wrestling, even though New Japan's making a comeback, you know, the idea of you know, 50-year-old executive that's been around is, you know, pro wrestling. That's that thing that was big in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And now it's not big anymore. And you know, they would probably more, you know, even though the 90s did great business for a lot of companies in Japan, actually exceptional. I think to the average person in the culture, it really was a lot bigger in the 70s and the 80s because it was on television in prime time and lots of people watch it because, you know, you just flip through when you got, you know, you flip through the channels and it's there and you've got these larger than life characters. And I mean, they really had them, you know, I mean, the Andre the Giants and, you know, Bruiser Brodies and, you know, people like that, that were just, you know, all of those guys, Terry Funks, were, they're just visually, when you look at them and they just had a certain charisma about these guys, that's very, you know, it was, you know, and not just those guys, there were lots of guys like that. So you know, it was just so much more mainstream. And now, you know, the guys are all different, and there are guys with a lot of charisma in New Japan Pro Wrestling and in Dragon Gate and some of the other companies, but it's not. I mean, aside from like a couple of guys, there's really not a lot of them that have it at the level of the guys before. I mean, the top guys absolutely do, but before there were more who had it, and they were in a position, you know, they had the exposure, which accentuated it. So, you know, yeah, I mean, the you know, they could do tremendous on a pay-per-view, but they're not getting primetime network TV. It's just not going to happen.
All right, everybody, we are going to wrap it up. This is our second show today. We had our Hall of Fame call-in show earlier today, which is actually a great show. Head up there to the front page and check it out. And back issue of the Observer is already up. We'll have a new Figure 4 and Observer up in the next couple days. A lot of shows coming up. So check out the front page for more, everybody. And we'll talk to you again after a while.